But that stuff does not get sent skyward when it's coming from clean energy sources like wind and solar and geothermal. And we're going to talk about that right now with Ted Coe. And Ted is joining us on the Green Front thanks to our friend Leslie Sheridan, who met Ted, I believe, at Greenfest in San Francisco last month. And she said, you've got to interview this guy. He's a dynamo, and he is the Associate Executive Director for the Clean Coalition. Thanks for joining me, Ted, on the Green Front, again on short notice. I really appreciate it.
Great to be here. Thanks.
So tell us what the Clean Coalition is, what you do, and then we'll talk a little bit about where things stand as far as, you know, cities and regions depending on more localized, cleaner sources of energy.
Sure. Yeah, the Clean Coalition is a nonprofit advocacy group, and our mission is to get the deploy more clean energy, clean local energy, as quickly as possible in the U.S., and to get all the great economic benefits that go along with developing and deploying clean local energy. So we really focus on reducing the barriers and problems that exist out there in the laws and regulations that make it harder to build a solar farm or wind farm or geothermal project. And we focus on trying to get those barriers down by changing the laws and regulations, making it easier, cheaper, and faster for you to build your clean energy project.
And what are some other barriers, since, you know, polling always shows that, you know, everybody, even across the aisles, believes that clean energy is a good idea. And yet if you look at the percentage of America's electricity, most of it is still coming from, you know, dirty fossil fuel industry. So what are the primary barriers, and are they, you know, in the midst of going away, or are they still just as big as ever?
Well, yeah, the key barriers, we talk about there's four key barriers to clean energy deployment, and one of those is, the first one is what we call procurement, and that is the, you know, the utilities' purchase of energy and making their choices of where they, what energy they buy. So that's one of the biggest barriers in the sense that the conventional wisdom has been that everyone still believes that clean energy is so much more expensive that, it's not worth doing, and it's not something that it's going to drive your electricity rates really higher. That's one of the main barriers that if we, you know, as clean energy, you know, technology has gotten cheaper, and as we look at the full costs of dirty energy in terms of the, you know, environmental impacts and climate change, that really clean energy in a lot of cases is actually becoming, you know, on par or even in some ways more valuable or cheaper than a lot of dirty energy. So that's one of the major barriers that we have to overcome is that perception. The second one is what we call grid access or interconnection. Is, you know, we can put up these solar farms and these wind farms, and that's great, but if it's difficult or expensive or technically hard to actually plug it into the grid and start delivering the energy, then there's almost no point in building the farm itself. So there's a lot of outdated regulation and you know, slow and expensive processes for doing that, for just plugging the energy in so that you can start delivering the energy. That's the second major barrier. Again, one that we're addressing head on, and that there's, you know, some definite progress, especially in California, on that. And then the third one is financing, as getting the money for loans and investors to finance your projects. Again, a lot of that financing and the difficulties or how easy or hard it is to get financing is really dependent on not only your local policies but also your state and federal policies around clean energy incentives. And then finally, the last one that is the barrier is permitting. This is one that, you know, if your location and you get the land permits or the use permits and environmental permits to actually build your project, the fact that the rules around permitting are, you know, one for every city or one for every state, they're just, or every county, it's so complex and so difficult to navigate, and in some cases really expensive, is another problem. So as an organization, the Clean Coalition focuses on those first three. We don't deal as much with the permitting because there's other organizations that are much more experienced and much more advanced in working on that. But for the procurement and the grid access and the financing, we work on policies that help all three of those.
And you did mention California as being a leader in making the transition to cleaner energy sources. Mm. Not surprising, given we tend to be the green golden state. And locally, we have had the wonderful example, a huge success story of Marin Clean Energy. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about how they overcame the barriers that you just mentioned?
So they... So Marin Clean Energy, for those who don't know, is what's called a community choice aggregator, and it actually allows the community to make the decisions on where their energy sources, where their energy comes from. So just the simple fact of taking that from the control, the ultimate overall control of an investor-owned utility such as PG&E to the community level, in that kind of legal structure, number one, it automatically gives you a lot more control about going, you know, going greener and being able to say, yes, we do want, even if it does cost a little bit more, we do want to actually do this. This also allows them to institute a program, and Marin Clean Energy started a program called a feed-in tariff that is modeled after the success in Germany and other parts of the world that have used this kind of policy to make it easy, you know, a standard contract to make it easy for people to build and sell clean energy into to the utility. This program, you know, just... They just had the first kind of experiment or pilot of it in the last year or so. And being able to create one of those programs, and because you're a CCA, because you have that community control, you can actually have your utility implement one of these programs and encourage development of clean energy in your local jurisdiction.
And we pay a little bit more on our utility bills to be part of Marin Clean Energy, and there's two options, green and deeper green. Pay a little bit more if you are contributing more to clean energy development and infrastructure building. And we also recently had the last holdouts, the last cities in Marin County that were not on board are on board now. So that's very exciting.
It is, and it's great progress. It's one of the things that, to be clear, that with that kind of structure, with that community control, you really can overcome a lot of the barriers on the procurement side of the first barrier that I talked about. But however, you still are working with the grid owner, which is still PG&E in this case, and so. The CCA model.
We spent a fortune, we should say, to fight Marin Clean Energy's efforts and lost with the ballot initiative.
Right, they did, right. And the challenge there is that even if you have the best procurement programs and the best, you know, the community wanting to get more clean energy, that the grid access interconnection issues that I talked about are also still potentially a problem when the larger utility still owns the actual physical grid.
Hmm. And, you know, other countries are ahead of us, some of them, particularly Germany. They really, you know, especially in the wake of the Japanese disaster, have turned away from nuclear power, even though their neighbor to their west, France, is very heavily invested in nuclear power plants. But they are really quickly ramping up their solar infrastructure, showing it is possible.
Absolutely. One of the things that we talk about is that if you look at Germany compared to California, and we are, you know, rightfully tout ourselves as leaders in the U.S. as far as clean energy deployment. But if you look at the numbers, Germany last year did over 20 times more solar power deployed, you know, and, you know, delivering energy than California did. 20 times. And
wow.
So, and yet our sun in California, the sun we get, is 70% better than Germany's. So, you look at the difference there, and it's like, why can Germany do so much better with their and deploy so much more clean energy than even California can? And it really comes down to their policies and what they've done in their, you know, state and local regulations to make it easier to build and plug in those new solar systems.
What do you hope will happen, you know, politically? What needs to happen at the federal level to really make it more, reduce the barriers for entry and just make it more friendly to bring more local clean energy sources to American cities?
At the federal level, I don't think we actually honestly need grand sweeping federal legislation. I think a lot of the programs and policies that we talk about are really best suited for implementation at the state level. So at the federal level, we would benefit from having a national renewable portfolio standard. Like, you know, we have in California, we have the most aggressive one in the country, which is 33% of our energy from renewable sources by 2020. If we had something like that at the federal level, I think that would be a great, you know, step forward and a boost for the whole country. At the same time, most of the policies that are, you know, on the ground is going to make a difference for, you know, the individual entrepreneur or the homeowner who wants to put solar on their rooftop. Those policies are more state and local level policies that the federal government in some ways should just do as much as they can to get out of the way and make it easier for states and local cities to do their own programs without running afoul of any kind of federal issues.
I think we should probably touch on fracking as a practice and get your opinion on that, although I can probably imagine. You know, some say that's a clean source of energy development, deploying, if you will. Others say it's horrendous. What's your position?
As an organization, we don't have a position on fracking specifically. But I would say, you know, personally, it's maybe, an evil, relatively evil transition if we need to. I mean, if we really need to get off of coal, and if we need to get off of coal towards natural gas, we can, I mean, that will help. But, I mean, honestly, the last things that I've seen really have shown that if the process itself is not only extremely dirty and potentially, you know, harmful to the environment, but the reserves and the potential for what you can get out of these areas with fracking has been, you know, wildly overstated in a lot of cases, and to depend on that is very risky, I think, when we can deploy clean energy without natural gas at a rate, at the kind of rate that Germany is doing. We can do that. We don't need to depend on highly risky, potentially dirty sources.
Yeah, and not only is it contaminating some underwater groundwater supplies, but also there's some concern that it's actually triggering small earthquakes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no, and in my mind, again, this is personal opinion only, but really, there's no reason to go after the risky, potentially damaging sources and processes when we know we have deployable, cost-effective energy that's clean.
So why are we doing that?
It goes down to the same thing I said before about the conventional wisdom. People just think that the clean energy is too expensive, and that we as a society, and especially when it comes to policymakers, we've generally just not accounted for the full costs and full benefits of what we're talking about. When we make decisions, everybody looks at just the sticker price. Oh, this is the sticker price of the energy. And they don't look at what's the full cost of that source of energy. And when you start comparing those in, and there's been some reports out recently that if you really compare the full cost of fracking versus the full cost of, say, a wind turbine, the wind turbine comes out much cheaper.
And not just the economical cost, but the cost to our environment.
Right.
Climate change.
Right, exactly. When you account for everything, and you don't just look at, you know, again, the sticker price, really, if we made our decisions, if we made our energy resource decisions in this country based on full cost accounting, I think we would clearly see that it's better to be putting all our money into the clean sources.
Well, Ted Koh, you are a precious resource. I'm so glad to know about the Clean Coalition. How can listeners find out more about your organization if they'd like to learn more about this issue and perhaps support efforts to bring America to a cleaner future?
Yeah, you can just go to our website, www.clean-coalition.org. And, we have our presentations, our papers, and a lot of our policy work on there, and learn more about us.
And as we are at peak oil or perhaps beyond, I'm sure you know about the Peak Oil Institute, post-peak oil institute.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure more people will be looking for resources like yours to say, well, okay, if we have peaked, what's next? What are the alternatives? And so glad that you guys are doing the work in advance of the demand, which hopefully will be right around the corner.
Right.
Thank you so much, Ted Coe. Wish you a green and happy new year in 2012. And I want to thank our listeners for being with us on this holiday edition, but live nonetheless, with lots of great guests. Ted Coe with the Clean Coalition, and just before that, we had Matt Honenstreet with the Hilton Hotel chain talking about industry standards being greenified at the Hilton, not only in the Bay Area, but also across the country. And also our friend D.R. Tucker at the top talking about the eco-politics of the week. Thank you for joining me on the Green Front. Have a great one. See you next year.